Hey, get going here now. Good morning, everyone. Last day at Tech Ed. Hope everyone's had a good week, productive week. Hope everyone had a good time at the party Wednesday evening. Today we're going to talk about services and VMM. We're going to cover what they do in 2012, and I'll also talk about where we're going in SP1, some of the features you'll see us light up. My name's Stephen Barron. I'm a lead program manager on the VMM team, and the main area that I do focus on is our services and application deployment investments. I'm going to ask a series of questions to know how I should structure some of the content. How many people were at my session Wednesday when we went over service template creation? Okay, just a handful. Great. So how many people are familiar with VMM 2008 R2? And with VMM 2012? And with services in VMM 2012? There are three hands remaining. Great. So we'll take it from the ground up. We're going to talk about why we made services in VMM, the features that they light up for you, and there will be a ton of demos that we're going to go over. So hopefully by the end of the session, you're going to have a really good handle on why you want to use services, and where we're going in the future with services. So it seems like everyone in the crowd was familiar with VMM 2008 R2. And as you'll recall, we had this notion of a VM template in 2008 R2. And a VM template was great for deploying standalone virtual machines in a repeatable and reliable fashion. And if you think about a VM template, it was really made up of three things, right? One or more virtual disks, a hardware profile, just like it sounds, hardware profile defines the hardware characteristics of the VM, how much memory, CPU, so forth, and a guest OS profile. And the guest OS profile for us really was a set of things that people wound up doing with unattend files, such as setting the initial computer local admin password, the computer name itself. Is the machine going to be domain joined? And if so, to which domain are you going to join it? And what are the credentials that are required to join that machine to a domain? And that was really the range of things that you could do in terms of guest configuration in VMM 2008 R2, were things that you could specify in our guest OS profile, things that you could do by attaching a custom unattend file, or if you were brave, you could try to run a GUI run once script as part of our guest OS profile deployment. So when we started thinking about VMM 2012 and where we wanted to take the product, we looked at our existing VM template and we tried to find, certain limitations that we were aware of and limitations that customers had pointed out to us about VM templates. And we came up with a number, but there were really three big ones that we wanted to solve with VMM 2012. The first one was VM templates are good for single machines at a time. And that's fine for some cases, but if you think about distributed applications and services that you're providing to your end users, it's very rare that you'll find a service that consists of a single machine, especially in production environments. Right? So if we think about something like a typical two or three-tier application, in a two-tier application case, you probably have a web front end, and you're probably not running one machine. There's probably two, three, four machines behind a load balancer. And on the back end, there's probably something like a SQL server. So even a simple service with a web front end and a back end is going to have at least two machines. And in many cases, it's going to have three, four, five, six machines that all contribute to providing that service, right? Contribute to running that distributed application. So that was problem number one with VM templates, one machine at a time. Problem number two is, deploying a base OS is great, right? You have to be able to do that. But if you think about an operating system, even like Windows Server 2008 R2, if you don't enable at least some roles and features, it's almost impossible for that server to be doing anything useful. I mean, even to make it a file server, you have to enable some role. So we looked at VM templates and said, we really don't allow you sufficient flexibility to do in-guest configuration at provisioning time. So again, you were limited to maybe trying to run a GUI run once script, but that was about it. The third problem was when you deploy VMs from VM templates, it's what we call a fire and forget operation. What I mean by that is when you deploy an instance, that instance in the environment maintains no relationship back to the template from which it was provisioned. So you really have no easy way to do a couple things. One, figure out over time, does that VM still look like the template from which it was provisioned, or were there some changes that were made to it? And two, there's no real easy way to update existing instances. So if you had a VM template in 2008 R2 that you used to deploy, say, a standard web server, and you went and deployed 70, 80 instances of that server, and you had initially given them each a gig of memory, and it turns out that, well, they all really need 2 gigs of memory, you're kind of out of luck as far as VMM goes, to rapidly and reliably orchestrate that change across those server instances. You're going to either have to touch them all individually, tell someone else to do that. But again, how do you even know which machines were provisioned from that template so that you know which ones even need to be updated? So in 2012, we introduced a new type of template called a service template and a bunch of associated artifacts. And we tried to solve at least those three problems with service templates. So the first thing a service template will let you do is you can still use it to model a single machine, but you can use it to model multiple machines, even of different types. So if you think about a three-tier application again, a service template would allow you to model the web tier. And maybe that has a certain hardware configuration, a certain OS configuration, and a set of scripts, roles and features, and other things that you want to happen for machines that get provisioned in that tier. Your mid-tier might have a different hardware config, a different OS config, and a different set of applications and scripts to be installed. And finally, your data tier may have yet a third type of hardware configuration, yet another type of OS config, different roles and features, and maybe you want to provision SQL Server as part of that tier and instances that come up in that tier. So that's problem number one. Problem number two is the rich ingest configuration that you want to do. So with a service template, and only with a service template, you can do things during provisioning and update time like enable Windows Server roles and features, deploy applications. We have support for what we call three first-class application types. I'll tell you why they're first-class in a moment. Those are Microsoft Web Deploy for IIS-based applications, Server App V, which if you're familiar with Client App V, Server App V is a derivative of that technology, mainly geared towards server-based applications, though, and that ships as a part of VMM 2012. And finally, SQL data tier applications, DAC packs, for deploying databases. And in conjunction with that, you can also execute arbitrary T-SQL scripts. Now, the reason I call those application types first class is that you can drop them into a VMM library, we'll refresh those packages in, and we actually understand the metadata about those packages. So in the web deploy case, if you've defined parameters for that web deploy package, we'll refresh those in and allow you to configure them. Server App V has a similar construct. They call it properties. And we'll refresh those in and allow you to configure those. And finally, data tier applications don't have much metadata associated with them, but like Web Deploy and Server App V, we understand the whole life cycle around those types of packages, how to install them, how to uninstall them, and how to update them in a very native fashion. So the next question usually is, well, that's great, but I actually have some MSIs, or I have some custom setup executable, or I have some scripts that I wind up running against my machines. What do you do about that? So we built a framework that we call GCE, or Generic Command Execution. And this allows you at multiple places in the model to actually inject payload inside of a VM, so deliver a set of files, a folder, and also execute some arbitrary script. And we'll give you very granular and rich control over how those scripts execute. And you can execute multiple scripts, either at provisioning time, at update time, and so forth. So why would you use services? Well, one, clearly, as we spoke about earlier, you probably have distributed apps and services that you're running that actually span multiple machines. So by using a service template, you can not only deploy them as a unit, but you can manage that service as a unit. You can stop it as a unit, start it, save state it, delete it, and then update it as a unit. For services, you can mark certain tiers as a service, so perhaps your web tier as a scale-out tier. And we give you a new wizard, and it's also available through our PowerShell commandlets, to initiate a scale-out. So if you've done integration with Ops Manager, for example, you could monitor certain performance characteristics of the machines in your web tier, for example, and based on some thresholds, automatically initiate a scale-out. And we'll bring up a new machine, and if you've configured us with load balancer integration, we'll go ahead and add that machine to the right load balancer, the right VIP, the right pool. And finally, and probably the most important aspect, is really the composability aspect that a service template will give you. What I mean by that is, when we talked to lots of customers, we found out that for many customers were maintaining lots and lots of sysprepped images in their environment. They had a sysprepped image for an IIS server, a sysprepped image for an app server, a sysprepped image for a BizTalk server, a sysprepped image for a file server. The list goes on and on. And maintaining those images is a real manual and burdensome process over time. So if you think about, if you sysprepped an image that had your standard IIS configuration, and it turns out that you needed to make a change to that 6 months down the road, you have to rehydrate the image, make your changes, re-sysprep it, make sure users are using that new image to get those changes. But with a service template, you can define all of your customizations via the template. Those properties, that template itself, is actually stored in our database, so it consumes very little space. And you could take a base Server 2008 R2 operating system image, for example, that's been sysprepped, no roles and features, no configuration done to it, define all of your configuration within the template, which roles and features should be enabled, which scripts need to run, what other types of configuration you want to do, and then you can maintain that information in the template and only support, say, a single operating system image that's out there in your environment. And if it comes time to make changes to that, we have this great service lifecycle that allows you to actually make those changes via the template model. So if you had a template for a standard IIS server and you enabled a bunch of roles and features and you deployed 80 web servers out in the environment off of that template, and it turns out that all your applications actually needed the IIS6 management compatibility feature, and you hadn't checked that in the initial version of the template, well, in the past, again, you would have either had to touch 80 instances, tell all the people who are admins on those boxes, well, just go and enable that feature if you need it, or find some way to script the install of that across 80 instances. By leveraging a service template, you could copy the template, make your changes in that updated copy, and then apply the new version of the template to 1, 10, or all 80 instances. We'll diff the templates, detect the changes, and then apply those changes. And if it's something that's non-intrusive, like adding IIS6 management compatibility, doesn't require a restart of the server, doesn't require an IIS reset, you could go ahead and apply that immediately. If it's something more intrusive, like maybe you're enabling message queuing that requires a restart of the box, you can go ahead and set the template and then come back and defer the application of the changes to some scheduled maintenance window that's applicable to your environment. And at that time, we'll go ahead and diff and apply the changes. The other thing I should have mentioned, I'm happy to take questions as the discussion's going on. So if you have some questions, raise your hand. If it turns out there's too many, I may ask you to hold to the end. But for now, any questions, just raise your hand. So the service lifecycle management for us really consists of four different phases. First one is creating a template. So unlike virtual machines, where you can just create a virtual machine without having a pre-existing template, we require that you have a service template before you can actually deploy a service. Second is customizing the deployment. The trick with a service template is you really want to be able to use that template in multiple environments. So if you think about a two-tier application that has a web front end and a SQL back end, and you want to deploy that into dev, QA, staging, production, maybe the only thing that changes between those deployments is the connection string for the front end. Well, we have a feature that we call configurable service settings, and we'll go into that in depth, but essentially it allows you to tell us that you want to ask the user for certain values at deployment time. So maybe you can model that connection string as a configurable service setting, and you can use that template, deploy into dev, ask the user for the values that are appropriate to that connection string, and we'll not only store those values over time, but we'll go ahead and inject them in all the places that we should inject them throughout the model. So you could take that single template, deploy it to dev, QA, staging, production, change the connection string for each deployment, and you know that each of those instances have been spun up the exact same way, right? The same exact recipe has been followed. So that really cuts down on the, I'm following a 40-page install document, I miss step 27, subsection B, configuration setting 1, and now my application doesn't work. By using a template, those instances are going to get provisioned the same way every single time. Finally, after you've customized deployment, you go ahead and deploy the service. So now you have a running instance out in the environment. And over time, that instance is probably going to make changes, is going to have changes made to it. So maybe if it's a web deploy based application, you get a new version of the web deploy app. Or maybe there's a new functionality being introduced and you get a brand new application package. Well, again, the service lifecycle management tells us that what we do is we copy the existing template, we make our changes, and we apply the updated template to running instance that's out there in the environment, one or more. Now, the other thing I should have mentioned earlier is when you deploy a service instance from a service template, we maintain a relationship and a reference back to the template and the version of that template from which that service instance was deployed or is currently pointing to. And once you have at least one running instance of a template out there, that template and that version of the template becomes read-only. Because we don't want you making changes there, right? We want you to know that the instances out there actually match that template. So the template's not changeable. You copy the template, update it, and then apply the updated template. Now, if you have no running instances for a particular version of a template, certainly you can delete that, you can change that template. But when there's one or more running instances that are out there, live instances, that version of the template is read-only. So again, talking about the service lifecycle, you always start by creating a service template. It's always your starting point. We have a new designer that we built for VMM 2012 that allows you to create these things. And in your service template, you're going to define one or more tiers of the service. So again, for a standalone single virtual machine, it could be a single tier with a single instance in it. That's fine. You still may want to do that, though, and use a service template for that, because if you use a normal standalone VM template, you're not going to be able to take advantage of the in-guest configuration features like role feature enablement, application deployment, and script execution. So you define the tiers, you define their connectivity within terms of connectivity to VMM logical networks. You define things like load balancer, operating system configuration, and so forth. And typically when you're defining or creating a service template, actual information about the fabric, like, well, which host might this template actually be deployed to, or which physical load balancer in the environment is going to be leveraged by this template, usually that type of information is not available when you're authoring the template. So really what you're doing when you're authoring a service template is you're describing the requirements of each of those tiers, right, of each of the machines that are going to be provisioned. And at deployment time, our intelligent placement algorithm will figure out, based on if you're deploying to a particular host group or deploying to a private cloud, if that cloud or host group has access to all the required resources, access to the right type of load balancer, access to the right type of hosts. And if not, we're going to give you some sensible error messages as to what's wrong. So I'm going to quickly go through the basic building blocks of a service template, and then we'll switch over to a demo, and I'll show you three or four templates that take advantage of these features. First one is custom resources. So everyone was familiar with VMM 2008 R2, where we had this concept of a library. We still have that concept in VMM 2012, but we've introduced support for additional types of artifacts that you can drop into the library. So you can drop in things like web deploy packages, server app B packages, data tier applications, and you can also create folders in there that end in a .cr extension. And .cr for us tells us it's a custom resource. And what the library will do is it will refresh in the fact that there is a custom resource folder. We won't refresh in all the files that happen to be in the folder, but now that folder is available for use in a service template as a script resource package. And what that means is you want us to copy the content of that folder into the VM, execute some script, and then clean up after we're done. So if you had a custom MSI, for example, you could create a folder in a VMM library share, maybe it's called mycustomapp.cr, drop your MSI in there, maybe drop a CMD file or a batch script or a VB script to install that MSI. So maybe it's just a CMD that calls MSI exec /QN/I in the name of the MSI. You tell us what security context to run that under, and we'll go ahead and inject that folder, run the command, install that MSI, and then clean up after we're done. And we give you lots of places to inject those custom scripts throughout the model. We'll go through almost all the places that you can do that. Now, we include some custom resources by default with VMM, and those are for installing the web deploy framework and the server app V components, such as the server app V agent or the server app V sequencer. And you'll find those custom resources by default when you install VMM in the default library share. And if you add new library shares, we've given you an extra parameter called add default resources that's available either from the CLI or in the UI to tell us to go ahead and copy those resources to that library share as well. We spoke about generic command execution. Again, this is the ability to inject payload and execute arbitrary scripts inside of a VM, either at provisioning time or even to do an update in a new version of a service template that you're applying. You can specify things like, what's the security context that the script's going to run under? Does it have any restart behavior? Am I looking for particular exit codes or particular strings that come back in standard out or standard error? And in RTM, 2012 RTM, scripts to us are a black box, and they're still a black box in SP1. And what I mean by that is we're going to execute what you tell us to execute, but we don't really know what that script is doing, right? Because we're not parsing a VB script and trying to figure out exactly what it's doing, or a CMD file and so forth. So what would happen in VMM 2012 RTM, when you were doing a service deployment, if a GCE failed, you always had the ability to restart the VMM job, but we would always skip the script that failed. And the reason we did that was we didn't know if it was safe to rerun that script, right? We didn't know if that script, if it was run a second time, was just going to mess things up. What we did in SP1 is that's still our default behavior, but we'll allow you to mark scripts as what we call idempotent. And what that means is if that script fails for whatever reason, when you restart the VMM job, you're telling us, I know that this script is safe to run multiple times, so maybe you had a network connectivity issue the first time and that's why it failed. If you've marked the script as idempotent in our UI or via the CLI, when you restart the VMM job, we will re-execute that script. So that's an SP1 improvement that we've done. and we have multiple entry points that are available for these things. So when you're installing applications inside of a VM, you could tell us to execute a script before a particular application has installed or after a particular application has installed. Or you could tell us to execute a script before any applications have installed or after all applications have installed. Now, in 2012 RTM, those global scripts, the one that executes either before or after any application has been installed, we only let you run one of them. So one pre-install or one post-install. So if you had to run three separate scripts, for example, in the context of a service deployment, what we required you to do was create one master script that would call each of those individual three scripts that you needed to run. The problem with that is you lost the granular control that we give you over exit codes for a particular script, what should happen after a script runs, or is a reboot required in the middle of the script. So in SP1, what we'll do is we'll allow you to execute multiple pre-install or post-install scripts. We're testing up to 100 of each type, so clearly that should give you enough flexibility to execute a number of scripts either before applications have installed, after applications have installed, and you can even execute these if you're not installing any applications. So I have a service template that I'll show you that creates an IIS web farm, and it doesn't install any applications. It just creates a web farm framework-based web farm for me that I can then deploy applications to later. And I do that by leveraging a number of scripts to go ahead and configure the farm. SQL profiles. SQL 2008 R2 introduced this great ability to create a sysprepped instance of SQL. And you do that by running through the SQL installation wizard, and there's an advanced installation option, and that option is to prepare an instance of SQL. And what happens is you choose the features of SQL that you want, and there's a limited number of features you can choose, such as DB engine and full text search, I think integration services. And after you've done, after you're done running that wizard, you can go ahead and now sysprep that disk. And now what happens is when that disk is used by a VM, there's a mini setup wizard for SQL available to complete the installation. And completing the installation is setting things like, well, what's the instance name going to be? And which authentication mode should it be in? And so forth. So we built a construct called a SQL profile. And by leveraging this, if you have a sysprep disk that has a sysprep instance of SQL in it, we'll go ahead and complete the installation of SQL at provisioning time. So that by the time the VM is done being provisioned, it is actually a fully functioning SQL server ready to go. And our SQL profile will let you do things like specify the instance name, the authentication mechanism. Is it in Windows mode or mixed mode authentication? If it's in mixed mode, what's the SA password going to be? And what are the service account identities for the core SQL Server services like SQL Server Service, SQL Agent Service, and so forth? Now, when we talk about SQL in particular, when we spoke with lots of customers, what they said to us was, you know, it's great to be able to provision SQL servers, and it's great to be able to deploy SQL databases, right, DAC packs, but it turns out that I don't actually deploy a SQL server for each of my applications. Rather, I have maybe a big SQL cluster in production, and I use that to host tens, if not hundreds, of databases for multiple applications. So what we did was we built another object type called an application host. And in 2012 RTM, we have one type of application host, and it's what we call a SQL application host. And this allows you to deploy databases and execute T-SQL scripts against an existing SQL server in the environment, whether it's virtual, physical, clustered, managed by VMM or not. So this allows you to take databases and deploy them to shared SQL servers that happen to be in the environment. That's the only type of app host we had available in 2012 RTM. In 2012 SP1, we're introducing a new type of app host called a web application host. And that application host will allow you to take Microsoft Web Deploy packages and deploy them to arbitrary IIS servers in the environment, whether they're standalone, farm-based, virtual, physical, managed by VMM or not. And I'll show you an example of a service later that uses Web Deploy and SQL DAC, doesn't create any VMs, it actually just deploys and configures those applications to an existing web farm and an existing SQL server that's already in my environment. And I created the web farm and the SQL server by using service templates, and we'll walk through each of those. The configurable service settings. Spoke briefly about these. These are areas in the model that you can put your own friendly variable names, and the way you create them is you use the at symbol, give a friendly name, it can have spaces in it, and another at symbol. And what that tells us is you want us to prompt the end user at deployment time for the values of those settings. And those settings can be marked as mandatory or optional. They could also be marked as encrypted. And you can also give them a default value. So maybe you have a timeout setting in a web application. And that timeout setting varies anywhere from 120 seconds up to 360, depending on the environment. Maybe it's longer in the QA environment. Well, you could mark that as a configurable setting and maybe give the end user a sensible default value of 240, and they could override that at deployment time if they wanted to. This is a screenshot of the Service Designer. I leave it in the deck so you can look at it afterwards. We're going to jump into the Service Designer soon. It has the ribbon. It's got a new designer canvas where you can design, again, one or more tiers of a particular service, and finally a properties pane for whichever object's selected in the designer at that point in time. So the way to think about templates and instances is you have existing VM templates, right, in your environment. And of course, you could deploy standalone virtual machines from those. But the recommendation going forward with 2012 really is to take those and wrap them in a service template. And all that means is you're going to take your existing VM template and drag it into a service template, save it, and deploy it. That's it. There's no other magic to it. The reason you'd want to do that, even if you're not going to initially take advantage of service deployment features like role feature configuration, application deployment, and so forth, is if you deploy a VM from a standalone VM template, you cannot retrofit that VM to be part of a service. What that means is you can never, for that VM, take advantage of those features should you choose to do so at some point in the future. So the best way to do this is if you have existing VM templates, when you're in 2012, wrap them in a service template, go ahead and deploy them, and you're going to get the same virtual machine that you would have gotten if you had deployed right from the VM template. But by using a service template, you then have the opportunity to go back, make a copy of that template, maybe add some roles and features, maybe add an application, and then apply that template to one or more instances that you've already deployed, and we'll go ahead and do those changes, right? Add those roles and features, add the application, and so forth. This is another slide that I keep in here mainly for reference point because we've talked about all these components, so I'll walk through them briefly again. These are your existing objects that you had for VM templates in 2008 R2. A VM template had VHDs, a guest OS profile, and a hardware profile. So the new objects we've introduced in VMM 2012 are first a computer tier template, which really is just a VM template, although it has a few additional properties like what's the minimum instance count, maximum instance count for that tier, is it a scale out tier, and so forth. That computer tier template is wrapped in a service template. And we added a new type of profile called an app profile. And an app profile can have one or more application deployments. So you can have an application profile that has three web deploy packages, six database packages, two server app V packages, and a bunch of scripts. And you could put that all into one profile, or you could separate them out into individual profiles if you wanted. Profiles are where you define those custom scripts that you want to execute. Again, multiple places to have them executed. And we added roles and features to the guest OS profile section because it just seemed to fit with the OS configuration. We added that SQL profile again for completing prepared instances of SQL. And that SQL profile can also contain multiple SQL deployments. So if in your environment you wind up provisioning SQL servers that have five different instances, you can use a single SQL profile and define each of those five instances, and we'll specialize all of them at deployment time. Finally, we have a load balancer, next we have a load balancer template. So we support load balancer integration with, by default, we have a provider for Microsoft NLB. And we also have downloadable providers from the vendors for BigIP F5s, Citrix NetScalers, and one of the Brocade devices that the name escapes me at the moment. If you go to the networking session on VMM later today, they'll go a little more into depth on our load balancer integration and what that looks like. And then we have our application host profile, again, for deploying application packages like SQL database applications and Microsoft Web Deploy apps out to existing servers in the environment, whether they're physical or virtual. That has an application profile. You have to mark them in a special way. So those types of profiles for an app host cannot contain scripts to be run, aside from T-SQL scripts. And the reason for that is, since we're deploying to some server that we might not even be managing, A, we might not have an agent on there, and B, you may not have admin privileges. It may be a shared web farm to which you have some delegated permissions, but not permissions to actually inject and run some script on that host. So for an SQL app host app profile, you can specify SQL databases and T-SQL scripts. For an IIS or web app host profile, you can specify web deploy packages. And you mark the profile as which type it's compatible with, and we'll prevent you from adding things that we know are not going to deploy. So with that, we'll switch over into my demo system. And I know that demo said create service template. I did a session on Wednesday where we actually built a service template from scratch. So I'd suggest you going back and watching that one. That was MGT 321. I have a link to it at the end. So I'm not actually going to create one here because that can take a few moments. What I will do is show you a few service templates that I've already created and then show you what they look like in our UI. So the first one is this 2008 R2 SQL 2008 R2 server. So again, this is a great example of a service template that doesn't deploy any applications, but it does a bunch of rich in-guest configuration. So this is a single-tier service, defines one machine. It's not marked as a scale-out tier. This is where you can mark that down here, because this is used for deploying single SQL servers into my environment. If I look at the properties of a service template, or a tier of a service template, what you're going to notice is that it looks really just like the properties of a VM template. So it has a hardware configuration, it has an OS configuration. These look just like VMM 2008 R2, with one notable exception on the OS configuration page, again, roles and features. My SQL server doesn't need any roles and features, so I haven't defined any here. But you can see we give you a server manager-like interface to go ahead and decide which roles and features you want to enable. App configuration, again, this is going to be used to provision an arbitrary SQL server in my environment. So I'm not going to tie any applications to this particular template. What I am going to do, however, is specify that I'm going to deploy SQL here. So the VHD that I'm using, if I hover over this, if you look at the end, it says SQL Server 2008 R2 evaluation on Windows Server, blah, blah, blah. This is a VHD I prepared that has a prepared instance of SQL already built into it. And what the SQL configuration allows me to do is decide how I want this instance of SQL specialized and, you know, how I want the installation completed. So I give it a friendly name, and then I say, what do I want the instance name to be when I'm done completing the installation? So I've just chosen the default of MS SQL Server. If you use named instances for SQL instances in your environment, you'd put the named instance here that you want. When you walk through the SQL wizard to prepare an instance of SQL, it asks you to give an ID to that prepared instance. That's what this is used for. So when I went through my preparation, I gave that instance an instance ID of sysprep SQL. If your SQL servers have three instances by default, you'll prepare three instances of SQL, and you'll add multiple SQL deployments here, and we can complete the installation of all of those instances. I specify a run as account for installation. I'm going to come back to this in a moment because this becomes important in one case. SQL 2008 R2 requires that it has access to the SQL installation media when you're completing the installation. So we have you tell us where that media source is. Now, I've baked it into my VHD in a directory called c:\sql-eval. But you may want to just have it available on a network share somewhere. You don't want to bake it into your VHDs. In that case, you can point us to a network share here. But if you do that, you have to make sure that the installation run as account is an account that has access to that share, because that account is the one that's going to be used to complete the installation, and it's the one that's going to access the SQL installation media. Also on the configuration tab, you can specify initial SQL admins, again, the security mode, SA password, and which protocols you want enabled at deployment time. Now, for those of you familiar with 2008 R2 and OS customization, we have a series of things that we allow you to customize in the guest OS profile, but if there's something additional you need to do, like maybe you want to join machines to a particular OU in your Active Directory, you can attach a custom unattend file, and we'll merge those settings at deployment time. Very similar with the SQL profile, if there aren't things that we've exposed in this UI, we'll allow you to attach your own custom SQL configuration INI down here, and we'll go ahead and merge those settings again with the settings you've given us here so that you can specialize that that installation of SQL even further than what we've exposed in the UI itself. And finally, I can specify service accounts for each of my SQL services. So that's a SQL Server template. The next template I'm going to show you is a two-tier template that I use to create a standard web farm in my environment. So again, what you're going to notice is there's no applications for this template, but there are two tiers. So I have a primary tier and a secondary tier. Now, I use this to deploy a web farm, framework-based web farm into my environments. And web farm framework, if you're familiar with it, has this notion of a controller node or a primary node in the farm. And that's the node to which you actually deploy applications, and it's responsible for then synchronizing those apps throughout the rest of the members of the farm. Now, the reason this becomes important is my secondary tier servers have to join the farm that gets created when I install the primary tier. which means what I'm doing is specifying an application deployment order of one for the primary tier and two for the secondary tier. Now, the way application deployment order works is this. We don't actually wait until the whole first machine's finished before we start the other ones. Application deployment order simply tells us how to stagger the actual in-guest configuration. So when I deploy this service and it creates two or three VMs, we're going to actually provision all those VMs in parallel. We're going to specialize windows in parallel. And when we get to the point that our in-guest agent is taking over, doing things like role feature, executing scripts, that's where we're going to stagger the application deployment order per your specifications. So I'm going to go ahead and open up the properties of this primary tier so I can show you a few things that weren't present in the last service template that I showed you. The first one is in the application configuration section. Again, no apps that I'm installing, but I am executing a script. So I have this pre-install script, and I'm going to open up the custom resource that powers this. So again, this is just a CR folder that's in my library. So I'm first going to start by opening that up. And that one is right here, createwebfarm.cr. So if I come back here, you can see that is the script resource package we're using. And you'll see there's a number of files that are actually in there. So it's not just one file in this custom resource. We're going to copy all these files inside that VM, and we're going to go ahead and execute what I've told it to execute, which is I'm going to run CMD, and I'm going to run this particular CMD file, createfarm, that's right here. And the other thing you'll notice is I've used configurable service settings. So I want to be prompted at deployment time for the values of a username, a password, and the name of the primary server. I could have also specified that I want a prompt for the name of the web farm itself here. And what we're going to do is we're going to collect that information from the user at deployment time, and we're going to pass their values in as parameters to this script. And if I open up that script to show you what it's doing, you see that it's first installing web deploy, because that's a prerequisite for web farm framework. Then it's installing the WPI launcher, another prerequisite. Then it's installing the web farm framework itself. It's running a VB script file, and what that does is it configures some firewall ports. So it's a VB script that I wrote. It goes ahead and turns on the remote management service, which is required for web farm framework. It makes sure that service is started, and then it executes a PowerShell script called createfarmPS1, and the values that I provided in those service settings, you can see, are being passed in not just to the command file, but now being passed through to that PowerShell script. And createfarm PowerShell, what it's doing is it's now using the WebFarm framework PowerShell script to go ahead and create the WebFarm itself, give it a name, and tell it what the primary server is. So that winds up being configured. And then my secondary tier, if I push over to that, what you'll see is it's going to use the same custom resource, but it's not going to use the same script. So in the app config, it also has a pre-install script. And it's using, again, the same custom resource of create web farm, but it's calling add server CMD. And what that does is it installs the same set of prerequisites, and then it calls a different PowerShell script. And that PowerShell script is then going to take this server, and it's going to add it to the existing web farm that was created by the primary tier. And the final service template I want to show you as part of this demo, actually, before I do that, what I'll do is switch over to my VMM UI. And if I look at my VMs and services view, this is a SQL server that I deployed from that template. And it's called, it has one tier, and it was called SBSQL0001. And this is a web farm that I deployed from the second template I showed you. It has two tiers, like the template defined, a primary tier with a web server called SBWebPry0001, and a secondary tier with a single machine called SBWebSec0001. Now, back in the service template, again, since I can only have one primary node in my web farm, I've not marked this tier as a scale-out tier. So this is unchecked. But my secondary tier can scale out. And when I scale out that tier, That script is going to run again for the new instance and add that into the existing farm. And I've specified a default instance count of one. That means when I go ahead and deploy this template, I'm going to start out with one instance in that tier. And I've said that folks can scale up to a maximum of four. I could just as easily have marked the default instance count of two, which means I'd have a web farm of three servers every time I go ahead and deploy an instance of this template. And I could still scale up or scale down if I need to. The last template I'm going to show you is this wiki application. So if I look at this particular version of the template, this is a template that's actually going to install some applications. Again, it's got two tiers. This first tier, this web tier, has a server app v package for the front end of a wiki application that I packaged up. So in the app config section, you can see that we have pre-install script. And what this does is it actually installs the server app v agent, because I need that on the device since I'm installing a server app v package. And my server app v package, what I've done for the connection string and the admin password, if I've specified those as configurable settings. So I could allow 10 different users to deploy instances of this application, and I allow them to customize those instances per their requirements. So they each can set their own admin password for the wiki. For the data source itself, they could each set their own connection string parameters. And then on the data tier, I have a couple of things here in the app config section. The first one is the wiki database itself, and then a T-SQL script that I'm going to execute after that SQL DAC has been installed. And what that script does is they give me a username and password that they want for that wiki application, and this script is going to take that username and password, and it's going to create that login in SQL and give it access to that database. That same username and password is also going to be used to build the wiki connection string so that we know that that application is going to work at deployment time. But if you look at this service template, it's going to actually deploy a VM for each of these tiers, right? So every time a user deploys an instance of this, they're going to actually generate two VMs in my environment. And maybe that's fine for development purposes, but in production, because I had that SQL Server template and that web farm template, I already have existing shared infrastructure, right? And I just showed you that in the VMs and services view, where I had a staging web server and a staging SQL server. So I took that same service template, and instead of having it use VMs, I had it use our application host objects that we give you. Again, to remind you, this is to deploy applications to existing infrastructure in the environment, whether it's physical or virtual. So if you look at these, they have the same types of artifacts. My data tier has that same database and that same T-SQL script. And my web tier just has the web deploy version of that wiki application. And what I've done is I've said I want the end user at deployment time to tell me which web server are you deploying this to and which website on that web server are you deploying it to. And for the SQL server, again, I'm going to ask them which SQL server are you deploying this database to. So I can take this one template, I could deploy it 10 different times to either the same shared infrastructure by customizing things like the website or the web application name, and deploying it to the same SQL server and customizing the database name, for example. So this template, what I'm going to do, because creating VMs can take a while, maybe 20 minutes or so to deploy that other version of the service, I will deploy an instance of this one. So I'll call this my TechEd Wiki. And I still choose a host group, even though we're not provisioning VMs. So since my staging web server and my staging SQL server and the pre-production host group, I'll deploy it to pre-production. And now on the left-hand side, where you see these red X's, I've marked all of those service settings as mandatory. So every place I define one of those variables, I went back and said, I need this information from the end user before they can deploy. Because I know if I don't have it, that the deployment's not going to succeed or the application's not going to work. So first I can give a SQL password, and this could be anything I want. And then I say, which SQL server am I going to deploy this instance of that database to? So if I switch back to my VMs and services view, what you'll see is I'm going to use this SQL server, which is right down here. It's SBSQL0001. And I give a SQL user, so I'll say it's my SQL user. And now the web application. This is, what do I want that virtual directory, right? What do I want the application called? So I'll call it the same thing, TechEd Wiki. The web server that I want to deploy to, and again, back here, I'm going to deploy to the primary tier because Web Farm Framework is going to take care of synchronizing that to all the secondary tiers. So that's SB Web Pry 0001. And finally, which website am I deploying to? So what I'll do is I'll switch over to that web server real quick. And I'll show you where I'm going to deploy so we can see what happens after the deployment's done. So I have this site called New Site, and I'll refresh it, and you can see I already have a blog application out there. And I also, on my VMM server, have a connection open to that SQL server. So you can see I'm connected to SBSQL 0001. There's a blog engine database that happens to be out there. I'll just refresh the databases that are there. And once that refreshes in, I'll go ahead and deploy an instance of this service. And we don't even have to wait for it. So, whoops. One more is the website. And you notice that the site that I was going to deploy to was called New Site. It's important that you actually type it correctly. So I'll go ahead and deploy an instance of that service. We'll switch over to the jobs view, and we'll see that that's going to start deploying. We'll switch back to the slides, and we'll come back and check on this one in just a little bit. So my databases are still refreshing, and I will switch back. So customizing deployment. We spoke about this just now. We actually walked through the demo again. This is what allows the user to prepare that template for deployment. So if you have no configurable service settings defined, they just hit configure deployment and hit the deploy button. If they do have configurable service settings defined, they're going to have to fill in the required ones and then click deploy. And again, this allows you to use that single template, that one recipe, to deploy instances to multiple parts of the environment. Deployment preview, you saw this live, so we're not going to worry about watching that. And we'll walk through what happens during deployment. So what we'll do is we'll select a tier based on application deployment order. Again, we'll actually provision all the VMs in parallel, and when we get to that application deployment phase is where we're going to stagger things. So we'll select the tier, we'll go ahead and create the VM, we'll power on and wait for the VM. Then we'll install our guest agent. So after Windows has been specialized, we're going to go ahead and install a guest agent, and we're going to execute any of those scripts that you may have, and we're going to go ahead and install any applications that you've defined and execute any additional scripts that you've defined. If applicable, so if you've integrated us with a load balancer, we're going to go ahead and add that machine to the load balancer, and we'll move on to the next tier in terms of application deployment. The other nice thing that we do in the VMM UI itself is we'll actually show you the first-class applications, so Server App V, Web Deploy, and SQL DAC. We'll actually show you those applications in our UI. So you can drill in to each VM of a particular service, look at not only the application, but the properties of that application. So if you specified a connection string, and it looks like users are having difficulty getting to the site, you could easily, without having to log into the machine, open up a web config, find the right setting. If you've modeled that setting, you can go ahead and see the value of it right here in the UI. And if you had multiple instances there, you could check to make sure that maybe they're not only configured correctly, but that they're all configured the same way, and that nothing was modified, say, out of band. So we went through deploy. We're going to come back to that. I want to move on now to talk about some SP1 changes in our guest agent. So in 2012 RTM, that's the first time we introduced this agent and the first time we introduced these types of features, right, for in-guest deployment, in-guest configuration. And we had a few constraints that were associated with services in 2012 RTM. So number one was the VMM server actually communicated directly with our in-guest agent through WSMAN. And that caused a couple challenges for us. One was it means that those VMs actually need network connectivity to the VMM server itself. They also need network connectivity to all the library servers that might have application packages that need to be delivered. The second consequence, and probably the more restrictive consequence, was we required a two-way domain trust between VM guest operating system and the VMM server's domain in order to take advantage of service deployment features. And that was due to an authentication challenge that we had. So in 2012 SP1, we've completely rewritten that guest agent, and we've totally decoupled it from the VMM server so that the VMM server doesn't actually communicate directly with the agent. Rather, it's able to just get a goal state document to the agent via host mechanisms. If you're familiar with Hyper-V, KVP, key value pair exchange, that's the mechanism we use. And we have similar mechanisms available to us for VMware and Citrix Zen Server. Something else I should have pointed out earlier, all the features that you see are applicable to any of the hypervisors that we support management of. So you can have a service template that actually has a tier that deploys to an ESX environment, another tier that deploys to Hyper-V, and a third tier that deploys to Zen Server. There's no restrictions in 2012 RTM on service deployment features and the hypervisor itself. Now, in SP1 again, we rewrote the agent so that the domain trust requirement goes away. You can deploy services to untrusted domains, to work groups, to one-way trust domains, or still two-way trust domains. That's restriction number one that we removed. The second restriction around network connectivity to library resources like application packages and script packages, that goes away as well, but that does have some limitations. For that functionality, we're going to require that those services that don't have any network connectivity to library servers, those can function only if they're being placed on Hyper-V hosts. The reason for that is what we'll do is the way we get the packages there is we'll generate an ISO and attach that ISO to the VM. And we can only do that on a Hyper-V host. We don't have APIs to do that on ESX or Zen Server hosts. So for VMware and Zen Server and SP1, you're going to have to make sure that those VMs have network connectivity to library servers in order to get package transfer to work. If you're using all Hyper-V, you could take advantage of disconnected VMs and still get packages delivered to those VMs. The other thing in RTM that we did was, if you had a service template that didn't define any in-guest configuration like roles and features, script execution, or application packages, we wouldn't install a guest agent inside that particular VM. And that caused us some problems in the case that you deployed a VM initially, didn't take advantage of any of those features, and then wanted to update that template and maybe go ahead and add an application or configure SQL after the fact. We ran into some issues with getting the guest agent there after the fact. So what we've done in VMM 2012 SP1 is whenever you deploy a service, we always put our guest agent there, whether you've taken advantage of those features or not. And that means that you can deploy a VM from a service template that's not taking advantage of those features, and you always know that you can update that template later on, and the guest agent's going to be there to go ahead and enable roles, enable features, add applications, and so forth. So the payload transfer I spoke about briefly. Now what we'll do at upgrade time is we'll take all of your existing VMM logical networks, and we'll mark them as connected to all library servers. The reason we can do that is we know that if you didn't have network connectivity in that case, that you couldn't have possibly been deploying services anyway because the packages couldn't have gotten to the VMs. For new VM networks that you'll create, we've added a new property to library servers that allow you to tell us which VM networks, which library servers have connectivity to one another. And when you've done that, we'll fall back and use that network-based transfer. Now, if you deploy a VM through a service template and it's on a VM network that doesn't have connectivity to a library server, that tells us to go ahead and generate an ISO and get the packages there that way. So if you've got a VMware environment or a Citrix Zen Server environment, and you're deploying VMs to a VM network that hasn't been connected to that library server, we're going to go ahead and tell you ahead of time. We're not going to try to deploy. We'll give you an error ahead of time at that deployment page and say, you need to have network connectivity between library servers and this VM network for this service to be deployed to VMware or Citrix Zen Server. And again, Upgrade will take care of this for you for all your existing logical networks that are already in VMM 2012 RTM. So I'll switch back and I'll show you what that looks like real quick, even though there was a pretty intuitive screenshot on that deck. So I'm going to come back into my VMs and services view. And if I look in my library section, what you'll see is each of these library servers, if I go to the properties, I've gone ahead and said that this library server has connectivity to my Corp VM network, which is the only VM network that I have defined in the system right now. And I've done the same thing for my other library server. I've marked it with connectivity to that VM network. What that means is any service instance VMs that I deploy that are connected to Corp, they're going to take advantage of network-based transfer. If I hadn't had that checked, they would take advantage of ISO-based transfer to get the packages into the VMs. So I spoke about this a couple of times. We'll walk through the workflow for updating a service. You have your original service template, your original service instance, right? And there's a relationship between those two. Now you have some associated resources like application packages, VHDs, and so forth. The way you go about updating those services, if you were doing an application package update, for example, outside of VMM, you're going to get those packages into the VMM library. You're now going to make a copy of that original template and make your updates. And again, that could be things like enabling new roles and features, or maybe uninstalling some roles and features that you don't need anymore, or updating application packages. Now you take that updated template and you set it to one or more running instances. So you take a running instance and say you want a set template and pick the new version of that template. Now the instance is ready for update. We've done the diffs, and you can choose to either apply those changes immediately or defer them to some scheduled maintenance window that you've defined. We have two types of updates. One is in place. Just like it sounds, that means we're going to apply all the diffs between those templates directly to those running virtual machines. So the machines are up there and running, and we'll go ahead and update an application package or enable a new role on that machine. Second type is image-based updates. Now, the default is to do in place, but image-based updates are great for certain types of applications, mainly stateless applications or applications that you know where the state is and you have a mechanism to save it and restore it. What we'll do with image-based updates is we'll actually swap the OS disk, recustomize it, and then reinstall all the applications, re-execute all the scripts. For server app V, we'll automatically restore state. For other types of applications, we give you GCE entry points to save and restore state. So you can imagine if you had a stateless application, for example, and you deployed it using a base image of Windows Server 2008 R2, and you went out and deployed that instance into the environment, and 6 months later, you got a new image for Windows Server 2008 R2, and it's got SP1 baked into it. If your application is suitable for image-based updates, you could go ahead and tell us to do an image-based update for that app. What we're going to do is we're going to swap the OS disk, recustomize it, reinstall the applications, but we're going to be leveraging that new VHD. So now what you have is you've essentially updated the operating system underneath that application. And again, even if the app had state, if you had a way to save and restore it, we'll go ahead and execute those scripts or do it automatically for server app V so that your applications literally had the operating system updated underneath it, and it's in the exact same shape it was before the update. So I'll walk through the two types of update mechanisms. They look very similar. There's only a couple different steps. For in-place updates, we give you the opportunity, like application deployment order, to specify a tier servicing order as well. So if you've done that, we'll select the right tier, you know, 1, 2, 3, 4, what have you, whatever you've defined. We'll go ahead and select the machine based on the upgrade domain. So what's an upgrade domain? Let's say I have a two-tier app, and tier one, the front-end tier, is a web-based application, and it runs behind a load balancer, and I have four instances. I can tell VMM, and this is available in the tier properties in the designer, that I want two upgrade domains. What that means is we'll take the number of instances in the tier, so in this case four, the number of upgrade domains, maybe I specified two, we'll do the division, and we'll say, okay, we're going to take two of the machines, pull them out of the load balancer, if applicable, do the updates, put them back in, and then move on to the next two machines so that you can actually do an update operation, and we'll orchestrate it in such a fashion that there's no outage to the end user. So if applicable, again, we'll select machines based on the upgrade domain, pull them out of the load balancer, apply any pre-servicing scripts that you want us to run that you've told us about in the template, apply any application level changes, run any post-install scripts that are there, uninstall, reinstall new applications, anything that's been changed in that template. Add it to the load balancer if applicable, and then we'll move on to the next tier in the servicing order. For image-based updates, the workflow is very similar. We'll do upgrade domains, we'll remove from load balancer, but then what we do is we add a data disk to the machine. We do that for the server app V case. The server app V will natively track any accrued state for an application that you've sequenced. So we'll use that data disk to actually save the server app V state off of. And if you have, again, a web deploy app, for example, and you know that the state is in some folder location on that VM, you could write your own save state GCE, maybe save the state out to a network share, and then write a restore state GCE to bring it back in. For server app V, we'll do it automatically, back it up to the data disk. Then we swap the OS disk of the VM. Now, it's important to note, the VM object itself is the same. When the data disk's been, or the OS disk has been swapped, when it's been respecialized, that's going to be the same machine in AD. It's going to have the same SID. Everything's going to look the same, but it's got a brand new OS laid down on it. So we'll swap the OS disk. We'll recustomize the OS based on that guest OS profile. We'll go ahead and reinstall those applications, execute all the scripts that you have defined in the template. And then for server at V, we'll automatically restore the state that we've saved off to the data disk. For your own applications that you have maybe a restore state script for, we'll go ahead and execute that script so that you can get your custom state back, re-add it to the load balancer, and we're done. And if applicable, move on to the next tier with the next servicing order. So I'll show you a service update. And for this, I'm going to use a different application. So I'm going to come back in and show you two other service templates here, actually two versions of one service template. So I have this standard blog application, and I'll open it up in the designer, and I'll show you, after I zoom in here, what we have in this template. What we have is a SQL deployment and a single application that's being installed in this version of the template. So my application config, I have this blog engine application, and you can see that it's version 2.0. And I have a pre-install script that, again, just installs the server app V agent for me. So that's version 2.0 of that template. Now I'll show you version 3.0 of the template in the designer. Version 3.0 has a couple changes. The first one is you can see that there's a database included in this version of the app. And you'll also notice when I go to the app config page that the blog engine application is also updated. So now this is version 3.0 of that application package. So my developer has said, we have this blog engine app. It's been running without a database. It uses local XML files. But I've made some enhancements so that it now uses a database, which is much more efficient for storing my blog posts. And eventually, we'll be able to scale this service out if we have to. So this version of the template has an updated version of the package that my developer's given me. And it also has a database application that he's given me, because now this blog engine app is going to use a database. And it has a T-SQL script that has to be executed against that database. So if I switch over to my VMs and services view, I'll show you that I have one of these. Again, this is standard blog 2.0 and 3.0. So over here in my environment, I have this pre-blog is what I've called it. And that has a single machine called SBblog 0002. And you can see that it was provisioned from and is pointed to standard blog template version 2.0. And there's a single server app V package in it. And if I browse to that site to get that guy spun up, this may take a second for the application to get going. I'll show you the home page of the site as it exists with the version 2.0 of the template. This is essentially what it's going to look like. I just want to get the machine refreshed. So it's welcome to blogengine.net. Pay particular attention to the first post here, because if the update's successful, that post is going to go ahead and change. So this is now spun up. There's my blog engine application. So I come back to my VMs and services view. And what I can do is I can set template. And I have two choices here. I can either modify settings for the service or replace it with a whole new template. Why would I modify settings? Let's say that I ask my end user for a particular service for connection string settings at deployment time, and it turns out that they fat-fingered them. The last thing you want to do is have to delete the service and recreate the whole thing, because maybe it takes 30 minutes, 40 minutes. For any configurable service settings, those at variable name at settings, you can go ahead and update those on a service without making a new template. So if I had a connection string and I gave it the wrong values at deployment time, I don't have to redeploy, I don't have to make a new template. I could come in here and I could walk through the modify application settings wizard and just give it the new values, and we'll go ahead and make those changes within the instances. In this case, I'm actually going to replace the version of the template that this service is using. Now you'll note that I had a bunch of service templates in my library, but we'll group them based on the name and releases so that we don't accidentally apply a wiki blog or a wiki application template to this existing blog application. So I only have the choice of 2.0, which it's currently pointing to, and 3.0. So I'll choose the updated template, click OK. And in the 2.0 version of the template, I wasn't using a database. I wasn't asking the end user for any values at deployment time. In the 3.0 version, I am using a database. So they need to tell me, well, what's the SQL user and password that you're going to use to connect to the database? So I'll go ahead and give it some values here. Click next. And this is where you can choose between in-place and image-based updates. And again, the default is in-place. So I want to apply these updates to the running machines. If I wanted to actually do that OS replacement, I would choose the second one, deploy new virtual machines with updated settings. That takes a while, so we're going to apply the updates in place. Now what we're doing is diffing the two templates so that you can review the changes. So if I look in the server tier here, I'll see that I have a couple things going on. Number one is my application's being updated from Blog Engine 2.0 to 3.0, and I'm also installing a new application that's not present in the first version of the model, and that's that Blog Engine database. I have a warning here that there's a single upgrade domain. So since there's only a single upgrade domain, we're updating all the machines in that tier at one point in time. So there could be an outage to your end users. Just a warning for you to be aware. If I don't choose this, we're going to tell that service instance, hey, you have a pending template, and you can come back during a maintenance window and apply the changes. I'm going to go ahead and apply them immediately. Click Next. I have one last screen to confirm. Click Finish. And I should get this servicing on a service job. To update this particular app usually takes about 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes. So I will go back to slides for a second, unless there's any questions. That will consume a couple minutes. We could stare at the job trail, but it's not really that interesting. We can look at it afterwards. Okay? So again, seemed like everyone was familiar with VMM 2008 R2. So you'll recall that we have a number of refreshers in VMM. We have host refreshers, we have VM refreshers, and these things run periodically to make sure that we're aware of the state of objects in our environment. Have host properties changed, have VM properties changed. So for services, we built a new refresher, and it's called a service refresher. And what it'll do is really give you two types of states for a service. One is either okay. So all the VMs in that service are in an okay state to us. The other one is needs attention. Needs attention just means at least one of the VMs in that service has a problem. It's either failed, it's not running, it's critical from a Hyper-V perspective, and then you can drill into the service and you can figure out which VMs and which tiers need some attention. Then we have some actions that we've built. So there's certain things that we support at the service level. That's like start, stop, shut down, delete. So you can apply that at the service level and we'll cascade that to all the VMs. So if you do a delete on a service, we're going to delete all the VMs in that service. If you do a stop, we're going to stop all the VMs in the service. There are things that you can only do at the tier level. That's like scale out. And we'll show you what scale out wizard looks like after we get back to the demo system. And finally, there are things we still ask that you do at the VM level. So you can't checkpoint a service from the UI. You could from PowerShell get the service, enumerate the VMs, and checkpoint them all. That's certainly possible. But you can't right-click a service and say checkpoint and have us checkpoint all the VMs. So at the VM level, if you need to migrate VMs, you have to do that at the VM level. If you need to checkpoint, store them, all that's done on an individual VM basis. Again, you could PowerShell script it to get the service, get the VMs, and apply all those actions. Scale-in is an interesting one. You'll notice that we have a scale-out wizard I talked about, but we don't have a scale-in wizard. Scale-in for us is simply a VM deletion. The reason we chose that is scale out is a pretty non-intrusive operation, right? If the recipe works, if the load balancer integration is there, for us to scale out a tier is very non-intrusive. It's the machine gets provisioned. If everything goes well and it provisions correctly, we add it to the load balancer. If something doesn't go well and the deployment fails, well, we're not going to add it to the load balancer. So it shouldn't impact your end users. Scale in, however, is a very different beast. Right? And I can imagine that that would be something you'd want to orchestrate with something like System Center Orchestrator. And it might go something like, well, find the machine that has the least number of connections, and then remove it from the load balancer, and then wait for it to drain connections to a certain point. And then maybe I want to stop the machine. Right? Maybe I don't want to delete it right away. Maybe I want to stop it and wait a period of time to make sure that the load is still good for the other machines in the load balance pool. And then after a little bit of time, maybe I want to store it to library, and then if it's not being used and I don't require it, then I'll delete it. But to us, we don't really have that type of orchestration engine for you to define those. So scale in is simply delete VM. And how you choose to do that is up to you. Again, System Center Orchestrator, probably a great solution for something like scale in. So I'll show you the scale out wizard, and we'll also go back to that service update. So you can see it completed. I have a warning that, again, I had a single upgrade domain, so there may have been some impact to my end users during this operation. I'm going to go ahead and refresh that blog page, and we'll see what happens. And I get an error. So I call my dev and I say, hey, I deployed this new version of the template and I went to log into it to check it to make sure it's good and I got an error. He says, oh, you know, I think I saw that in my environment sometimes. You should just refresh the page and usually it just goes away. So I say, okay, that's fine. I'll go ahead and refresh the page here and see if the error goes away. So I refresh it. It still doesn't go away. I refresh it again. Nothing's happening. I call him up and say, you know, I don't think that this service is going to be good for production, right? Because the service is just not functioning correctly, and I need to get my end users back up and running. So he says, well, are you sure? You know, you can't try just a couple more times. I try it, and just nothing is happening here, right? This application update from this template is not good. So what I can do is I can come back into VMM, and I don't always have to roll forward. I can say, well, I'm going to set template, and I'm going back to that last template because I know that it worked. So I'll say OK. I'll click Next. Now, again, remember, those settings that I specified, they're applicable to the 3.0 version of the template. So this is just telling me those settings don't exist in 2.0, so we're going to be deleting them. I'm going to apply the updates again to the in-place machines, and I'm also going to apply them immediately. And we'll watch our job view. And usually this one is a little bit faster. So I guess deleting things is faster than actually installing things. This one usually takes about a minute or so. What should happen when this is done is we should be back to that last state we were in. If I look at my VMs and services view, you can see that we have that database deployed. We have that server app package deployed. And as the servicing operation is going on, we should see the updates even occur here, where when we're all said and done, we should be back to that original version of that application with a single server app package and no databases involved. So we'll just check the progress of the job. We see that the DAC application has been uninstalled right here. That step's completed. So this one will go away in just a minute. And now what we're doing is reinstalling that old version of the server app package, right? We're going from that 3.0 version back to the 2.0 version. So that should be just about done. We're at 56 seconds. And again, this usually takes just over a minute or so to get done. And so that job's complete. You can see that we've now updated the UI immediately. That DAC pack is gone, so no more database. And the version of Blog Engine is back to 2.0. And if I come back to my page here and refresh, now, again, that application was just installed, so it's going to take a second. You can see we're right back to where we were before. So in an application update scenario, something doesn't work, revert back. The other thing to note is I could have deployed a fresh instance from the 3.0 version of the template. So I don't have to go from version 1 to version 2 to version 3. I can go from 1 to 3, 3 to 2, 3 all the way back to 1, or deploy a fresh instance of 3. Oh, the last thing I wanted to show you was the scale-out wizard. So in my staging web farm, for example, I've marked that secondary tier as a scale-out tier. So we have this available in the UI. I just confirm which tier I'm scaling out. I can give it a name, or I can say, well, VMM's generating names for me, so I'll accept whichever name you generate. And this one may not have the right pattern. So I'll just give it a name. Since I deployed to a host group, it's going to ask me for a host. If this was deployed to a cloud, it would automatically choose something. And that host group cannot take it. So I'll run through the scale-out wizard. You see that host group only has one host, and he's pretty full. So I'm going to scale out this tier of this service so you can see what this looks like. And I'll give it a name. And I have hosts with capacity in this host group. Now I can configure any other settings if I want to change the VM location or change something else. I can set some properties, click Next. And you'll remember from VMM, we give you this view script button on almost every dialog and every wizard that's in our system. So from this, I can actually generate the script that we're going to use to scale out. I could take the contents of this, parameterize it, and then use this to automate scale out via Ops Manager, Orchestrator, or something like that. So we always give you these scripts that are a great starting point to automate things in your environment. I'll go ahead and hit scale out. And now what's going to happen is we're going to add a new machine into that tier. If it's behind a load balancer, we're going to add it to the load balancer. And I've just rapidly scaled out that particular tier of that particular service. So you can see we're starting the operation to create that VM. We're going to install all the apps. And again, if it's behind a load balancer, put it right into the load balancer. So I've expanded the capacity of that service through a very easy wizard, and I could have just as easily done it in an automated fashion by leveraging a script similar to this. I think that is the last one. So I have an updated resources slide, and I know that the conference is winding down today. So the sessions that you haven't been able to get to, you can certainly watch them on recording. Those will be available pretty soon. These are all VMM sessions. Highly recommend you either watch them. There's a couple more this afternoon, I believe, on storage and networking. So certainly check those out. I hope you, again, had a great week at TechEd. I had a great time talking to lots of you. Thank you for coming to the session. I really appreciate it.